I don't think we've ever seen anything like this before.
Two brothers.
Harley's got all the facts tonight. Jasper is a trivia weapon. Get out of his way.
A bunch of trivia questions.
Trivia is cool, and that makes these guys two cool guys.
Everything's on the line in today's episode of...
How do they keep getting it right?
Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump?
Giddy up, it is trivia time here on Trivia Champ or Trivia Chump. My name is Jasper, one of your two co-hosts. Joining me is my brother and the other co-host, Harley.
My name is Harley.
How are you going?
I'm pretty well, yourself?
Mate, I'm having a great day. I learned today that the pest control people are coming and getting rid of the cockroaches tomorrow. So, rip
wow.
Cockroaches, 23 to 2024.
There you go.
It's been quite the ride, old friends, but you're going home.
I think I've got an ant problem starting in this house. And
yeah?
Yeah. I left a plate of chicken bones out and they were just covered in it.
Yeah.
And I don't know if that's like made me notice the ants or like has attracted them, but yeah, it's bad.
Yeah. And will your landlord pay for it?
I don't know. I'm just going to put some ant root out as a first.
Yeah, okay.
First attempt.
Yeah, yeah, good call.
Okay. Right. Did you learn anything a bit more like universally interesting this week?
I have a fun fact for you and for the listeners.
Yep.
Okay, the mayor of the Blue Mountains, which is a semi-rural area just outside of Sydney, the mayor of the Blue Mountains' name is Mark Greenhill.
Yes, yeah, I didn't know that.
Well, I just think it's a great fact.
It's pretty good.
You'd reckon if you're Mark Greenhill's like opposition for the election, you can easily poke holes like, this man isn't dedicated to the Blue Mountains.
Yeah, yeah.
Only one look at his name will tell you he's dedicated to the Green Hills.
Yeah.
Can we trust him?
He's trying to infiltrate.
This is an inside job.
Well, my fun fact, this is going a bit viral, and you know, you being pretty interested in sport may have seen this.
Okay.
LeBron James
has
played against, have you heard this?
No, what's happened?
35% of all NBA players in history.
Really?
35% in history.
That's crazy.
Yeah, yeah. Been playing since 2003.
And the best part is he's actually still really good. Like, it's not like like an old dude making up the numbers. Like, he's still dominating games.
Yes. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, he's an exceptionally good player. And I think they were saying, what he was saying, that he's going to try and stick around until his son, Bronny James, like LeBron Jr.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like sort of a college player and stuff now.
I remember this article that said LeBron James Jr. refuses to wear number, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, so people don't, you know, associate him with his dad. And I think that's just hilarious. And someone like the top comment on it or like a retweet, which got really shared, is like, and coming in at number 43 is LeBron James Jr. Ayo, who's that?
It's like, guys, wait, are you related to LeBron James? Guys, I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay, so we've got the rules read coming up now. Let's throw it to the rules and then we can get right into it here, I reckon.
Sounds good.
You're the reigning champion, so you're going to want to defend that title, I'm sure.
I know.
And I'm on the comeback trail.
Beating my chest right here.
Absolutely. All right, so let's throw it over the rules.
Harley and Jasper have nominated three special subjects to be quizzed on by the other person. The three special subject rounds will feature five questions for each contestant. The trivia champ will be the person who answers the most questions correctly by the end of the game.
So those are the rules. So, Harley, do you want to tell us the three categories I'll be hearing questions about in today's episode?
You'll be hearing about what's my age again,
mm-hmm.
walking the walk and talking the talk,
mm-hmm.
and super.
Fantastic. You'll be hearing questions about not to get political, rub it in, and last but certainly not least, DRs that are not doctors. These, I think we're quickly... becoming like a bit of a Jeopardy spin-off, you could say. They sound like Jeopardy categories
a
little bit.
It's fun. Yeah, like it's fun.
Yeah.
If the person can take a bit of liberty and you're not exactly sure what you're going to get, you know, prevents us studying or anything like that.
Boom, exactly. So why don't you kick us off asking questions in the first round?
Okay, so asking questions about what's my age again?
Fantastic.
Round one.
Jean-Louise Carnet was the oldest verified person to ever live.
Mm-hmm.
The French woman passed away in 1997. At what age?
Do I get like a within one or two? I've got to get right on the year.
So I had my girlfriend helping me with writing this question.
Okay.
And she asked it to me and I knew it off the top of my head.
Wow, okay.
So. I thought this was like classic pub trivia. I'll give you within five. Oh, no.
No, that's
too much.
No,
plus or minus a year.
Plus or minus a year, okay.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, well, I'm thinking it's about 110, I reckon. It's around that, I think. It's got to be like a decent amount past 100, because 100, you know, like,
Letters from the Queen coming out.
Everyone's living to 100, so grow up. You know what I mean? I'm gonna say it's about. Let's go 112 years old.
122 years.
Oh my
old.
God!
Yeah,
that's verified. Like
that's birth verified. Certificates and stuff. Yeah, birth certificates.
Wow.
French woman. Currently, I think there's someone in Japan that's in the realm of about 117 at the moment. But yeah, there's been a few people over 120.
So she died. You said she died in the 1990s.
1997. So like a couple of weeks before you were born.
Oh wow! There you go.
Welcome back, Jean Louise Calvin.
C'est moi, Jean Louise. I don't know why I made my voice lower to do a Jean Louise impression there, but I did. So she was alive in like the 1870s then.
Yeah.
Born like 1875 or thereabouts.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow, that's quite remarkable. What did she do with her? Do you have any fun facts about her?
Oh, there were articles about her secrets to longevity, but honestly, I didn't read them. I just got the fact and kept typing because this is the first one I wrote.
Yeah, clearly Jean-Louise's wisdom is living on in the French people, smoking cigarettes, drinking dark coffee, and not seeing much sunlight. I'm sure those are all great recipes for living long.
I reckon if I lived for that long and there were articles about me in local newspapers and then national ones as they got even older, I'd give really shonky advice for how I managed to live that long. I'd be like, the way to do it, frankly, is to rip off the filter of your cigarettes and just smoke it straight.
Orange Zupa Dupas. Three every day and you'll be sweet.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I get sunburned intentionally to this day. Yeah.
Fantastic. Okay, so, I've come up short underestimating Jean-Louise there.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, so...
Is it Jean-Louise or Jean-Louise? Jean-Louise.
Wouldn't they pronounce it Jean in France, though?
No, I think Jean-Louise would be...
Jean? How would you say
it? How's it spelled? G-E-A-N-N-E.
J-E-A-N-N-E.
Oh, Jean... Yeah, I'm not sure. Jean-Louise.
Maybe.
Just go fast. Jean-Louise.
Yeah.
Okay, J. Louise. Sorry if you're listening. Oh, no, you're not.
Okay. What rapper, famous for wearing a Band-Aid on his face, made it on Teen People's Hottest Stars Under 25 in 2003, despite actually being 28 at the time?
That's hilarious. I don't know this fact. This is a really good fact. So he's 28 in 2003. So he was like a rapper of significance and or fame.
If I told, he had a very hot song in 2003, which you will still hear at clubs every night out in Sydney today.
Yeah, the person that I'm thinking perhaps, and I was actually thinking this before that clue, but now I'm definitely thinking it, could be Andre 3000 from Outkast perhaps, because I know Hey Ya came out, I think about 2003.
What about the Band-Aid on his face, though?
True. I can't remember Andre 3000 having a Band-Aid. I'm not really sure. I can't picture this person who has a Band-Aid on his face.
Of the hottest hits of 2003.
Yeah. I got to say, I wasn't doing a whole lot of listening to music in 2003. I was more focused on Jack and Jill and whether or not they were able to make it up the hill in 2003. Flavor Flav, Flo Rida, something like that, maybe that vintage. I'm just going to keep sort of Will I Am, Lil Wayne, Lil Jon, little idea with this question. Actually got no idea.
Really?
Yeah, really. So I'm just going to have a bit of a stab in the dark and say 50 Cent. No idea.
It was... With the disgusting habit of wearing a Band-Aid on his face while performing and in the public eye, Nelly.
Okay. Oh, he's if you're gonna ride with me,
yeah,
that's him, right?
The hot hit of 2003, which I didn't dare mention because you'd know it, is Hot in Here.
Oh yeah.
From the album Nellyville.
Well, I gotta say, great album name, Nelly. I can't actually picture what he looks like. Like I know those songs. Yeah. So yeah, I guess maybe 2003 Jasper should have paid more attention to the So Fresh CDs and less attention to
learning your ABCs and stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Zero for two. Jeez, horrid start for Jay Bruce.
I'm sorry to hear. Mm. The film Superbad.
Okay.
Seen it?
I have seen it. Yeah. Excellent. It's perhaps more in my wheelhouse.
What is the mononymous name of Fogel's fake ID, which lists him as a 25-year-old organ donor from Hawaii?
This actually came up quite recently for me. I was in Japan recently. I just got back. I was hiking the Kumano Kodo trek, an ancient pilgrimage sort of a network of roads in central eastern Japan. Been there for hundreds of years, so I brought the Trivial Pursuit cards along, you know, a bit of their culture, a bit of my culture. And this question actually came up about...
This is in Trivial Pursuit these days.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, what's the world come to? It's in Trivial Pursuit, and it was actually what state he was from, and I knew it was Hawaii.
Oh.
And I think, is the joke there that it's the most implausible state that you'd have a driver's license?
No. Well, Seth, which is Michael Cera's character, goes, I guess that's good, it's hard to trace.
Oh, right, okay.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, anyway, I know his name is McLovin in that. And from memory, a family friend of ours growing up had a boat called McLovin.
He did.
On the side.
And yeah, it wasn't just like he would call it McLovin and like you wouldn't know that it had a McLovin decal on the side.
Emblazoned upon the side, upon the gunwale.
Exactly, yeah. Not the gunwale, and it was in like... Yeah. It was in the kind of text where it was almost like that was its registration. Because you know how they've sometimes got like an alphanumeric
registration? I don't remember the actual font. Was it actually quite sort of, it looked very legit?
It looked quite legit, yeah. I love that. No, you're absolutely correct. Okay. McLovin.
Needed that.
And the character of Fogel said he was between that and Muhammad. And he justifies Muhammad as being the most common name in the world. Read a book for once.
Yeah, not so wrong. It's not wrong, to be honest. It is a common name.
Yeah.
I don't think that movie would have held up very well, I gotta say. I don't know if I should watch it in 2024.
Oh, great movie. I love it.
Is it?
I love it. Okay. The word aging can be spelt dropping the E or keeping the E.
Yep.
Which one's considered the correct way for UK English, including Australia?
Jeez, this is a nitpick.
Come on. You're a journo.
Well, actually, yeah.
You're a bit of a scholar of English.
It'd be bad if I missed this, wouldn't it? I think... With the E, normally in like UK English, it's the more sort of proper or like, yeah, I think it's the spelling is like harder. By proxy, like Americans spell things more easily. It's like, I haven't got any time for extraneous letters when I'm doing my spelling. I can tell you that. So, anyway.
Okay, yeah.
That's getting cut. Okay.
I like the logic.
Yeah, so I'm going to say with the E is the correct way in British or UK English.
Absolutely correct. Oh, clawing your way back. Two from four now.
Okay.
Well done. Okay, last question for the round. Have you heard of the birthday paradox?
I have not, actually.
So, the birthday paradox, also known as the birthday problem, states that in a random group of how many people, there's a 50% chance that two people will share a birthday. I'll let you have it, let's say plus or minus two.
Yeah, okay. Well, look, I'm thinking that you would, like, the maths on it would be that it's one in, say, 366 or 367, say, because then by that point, there's like, there has to be the double up. That's when it would, that's when it would, without this paradox, logically be. But you're saying it's less than that. So,
but
you know what I mean? Like that. That's what, if you had to be absolutely certain, it'd be one in 367. Because like that's the smallest it would be that
to you be unequivocally, absolutely certain.
Unequivocally have it. Yeah. But because that's one more day.
So that would make it 100% sure.
Right. But
this,
like,
would make it 50% sure, apparently.
Oh, 50% sure. Okay. So,
according for it to be.
Really? Like, okay.
Yeah.
So I'm going to say that it's less than half of that then, at least.
Significantly.
Yeah. So I'm going to say it's probably like double digits, I reckon. I don't reckon it's over 100. I reckon it's going to be about, I'm going to say 70 people. Because if you think of like a children's, like in a school classroom, often people that share a birthday in the same like sort of primary school class. Mm. So I'm going to say if you have two classes of kids, say like 70 kids, that's when it happens. And I reckon it's got to be a round number like that. 70 is my answer.
You've got to be really frustrated. It's 23, apparently.
23?
Yeah, I know. Nobody likes you when you're 23 as well, by the way.
Wow, yeah. You've managed to get that in there.
Just to double up the what's my age again.
Oh, he's very good. He is very good.
Yeah, no, 23. And like, I mean, I remember in high school, I was one of four people that had my birthday in the year.
Yeah, okay. In a grade of what, 180 or something?
180, yeah, okay. Yeah. And I don't know. I reckon there are people where you go, yeah, like that's... I know other people that have that birthday, right?
Yeah.
Like,
there must also be some days or some points of the year when it's more common for people to have birthdays. 9 months after Christmas...
Is what they say. Yeah,
maybe more birthdays than... Yeah, so that's all.
Blah, blah, blah. So 1 in 23. Look, I've stitched you up with a hard round there.
That's hard. Yeah, that's okay.
You're on 2 out of 5. At the end of the first round.
Fantastic. Okay, Harley, you're going to be hearing questions first up in Rub It In. So I kind of at first struggled to think of questions for this. So your questions are going to be stuff that's like rub related or also maybe just scenarios where something bad happens to someone, then something slightly worse happens to them. So it's kind of like it's been rubbed in.
Yep.
But sort of the rub here, there's the rub, so to speak.
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking you could talk about like rubbing like salty like herbs into meat, you know, like that. All sorts of things like that.
Yeah.
Like if you're doing some barbecuing.
I wasn't, but if I was. No, true. Yeah. There's
a bit of liberty in this.
There's no meat rubbing questions, I'm sorry to say, but there are rub related questions. Okay. Question one. As of 2024, what is the only song from the children's television show Sesame Street to have charted on the Billboard Hot 100? And think of the rub it in here.
Yeah.
Think of those puppets rubbing one another.
No.
Don't think of that. But think of the question.
Yeah, I mean, rub is clearly in the thing. Yeah. I'm going to think that it's like a song or a phrase that I've heard, but I don't... Sorry, like a phrase that I've heard, but I don't necessarily associate with like Sesame Street. Like, it's not going to be like the Cookie Monster... rubs some cookie dough together and then eats it. Like, it's gotta be...
I rub myself. Oh, no.
We can cut that,
maybe.
I'm gonna think that maybe it's, like, something like rub-a-dub-dub in the tub.
Yeah.
But that's not necessarily, like, a phrase that I even associate with Sesame Street. But I'm gonna say that that phrase may have come from a song really, really long ago, like in the 60s, 70s, early Jim Henson. I'm gonna say it's called, like, rub-a-dub-dub.
Geez, you're painfully close. It's Rubber Ducky.
Oh!
Yeah. So it's performed by Ernie.
Oh!
And it's Ernie, and he's singing to his, like, Rubber Ducky.
Oh.
It peaked at number 16 on the Billboard Hot 100 in September of 1970, and actually went on to reach number 10 in Australia. So even more popular in Australia than America. It was nominated at the 1971 Grammys in the Best Recording for Children category, but lost out to another Sesame Street album.
Oh.
So you were very close there, and your logic was quite good.
Yeah. See, I wouldn't... If, like, we were doing karaoke, I don't think Rubber Ducky would come up in my, like, rotation at all, but...
Yeah, I mean, I think it'd be...
I think I do remember, maybe, this vaguely.
I think you know the song. It's... I actually dispute that. I think the best karaoke songs are ones that people have kind of forgotten about, but when they start, they go, oh, yeah, I remember that. Like, a bit of Bad Day Daniel Powter sort of vibe. That's the best karaoke song, I think. Not ones that everyone kind of knows.
You're beautiful.
Exactly. That's exactly like that. And if you sing it that way, they'll love it even more.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so...
Excellent.
I'll add O from one here, but question two. In 2023, 22-year-old American Max Park broke the world record for the fastest time to solve a 3x3 Rubik's Cube, beating the standing record by less than half a second. To the nearest second, how long did it take Park to solve the cube?
Just in like normal play. He wasn't like, you know, running a marathon solving a cube or like
sitting
swimming.
Down.
Just
But I'll also say that when they do these competitions, they're allowed to like pick the cube up and like look
at
it and stuff.
Yeah.
But as soon as they start moving, that's when it starts. So like
he
can like look at it for as long as he wants before he like gets his game plan going. So just factor that in with your thinking.
Look, I think that Mr. Park, I reckon the number is like 3 or 4 seconds. I've seen videos where people are just freakish with it. And you get to a certain point with it and you just follow it like a preset pattern.
Mm.
So, like, it's not like every single move is like, you know, delicately thought out from what I understand.
Yeah.
I'm going to say less. So he beat it by less than half a second or half a second?
He beat the standing record by less than half a second. Yeah. I think it was like 0.3 seconds is something you beat it by.
So with that in mind, I don't think it's gonna be like 3 seconds because 0.3 is like 10% of that. Like no one's picking up that much efficiency on it. I'm gonna say maybe 5 seconds is the record for it.
So you reckon he did it in 5 seconds?
Yeah.
You've come very close here. It was 3.13 seconds.
He beat
it by, and it's quite remarkable. There's videos of it. It's quite remarkable. Like he He picks it up, looks at it, and it's just like a... And then he slams it down. And it's almost like when he slams it down, you didn't even realize as the viewer that he was done yet. It's quite remarkable. And he like knows... It's really cool to watch it because he knows that he's broken the record when he's done. And he like cheers and... Yeah. It's really cool.
Well, yeah. See, that's insane to shave 10% off a world record in something as common as Rubik's cubing.
Yeah.
It's not like it's like, you know, the fast time running 100 meters eating... I don't know, like a vanilla slice. Okay. Like this is something that people are actually doing on the regular. True. Training for.
You're not running and eating vanilla slice at the same time?
Not as a current. No, I reckon it would be hard.
I think it would be hard. But I think the thing is though, the vanilla slice wouldn't start sort of like being in the belly and getting gluggy till after you'd run the race.
I think part of it, because I'm thinking like a vanilla slice you buy at like a bakery that's creamy. I think part of it would be keeping it in one piece.
Yeah, that's true.
That you wouldn't be dropping like, it'd be like, you know, Mr. Guinness comes over and goes, mate, you dropped like... See, the threshold, you can't drop more than like 12%, and you've dropped about 14% of that vanilla slice. So sorry, man.
There's puff pastry strewn all over this athletics track. Good God, man. Have you no respect for the sport of vanilla slice running?
Exactly, yeah.
Okay, well, you've come close there, but close but no vanilla slice. Question number 3, and rub it in.
So I'm also on 0 from 2.
Yeah, 0 from 2. Okay.
Big oof.
Question 3. What goes on? A track from the 1965 LP Rubber Soul is the only song in the Beatles' official discography credited to which songwriting combination?
Okay.
You're a bit of a Beatles fan.
Yeah, I was hoping you were going to say what band released Rubber Soul, and I was going to be like, yes! So, look, I'm going to feel like I'll be pretty stitched up if it's like, you know, oh, it was Eric Clapton and George Harrison. Like, it's going to be two members of the Beatles working together. It even could be the only song written by all four of them together, you know, but I mean, you would think that they'd come up with something better than like some B-side I've never heard of, right?
Yeah.
Like,
I listened to it for this podcast. It's not good. There's maybe a reason, this combo didn't get together.
I reckon they excluded the best songwriter out of all of them, John Lennon, and maybe even McCartney. I reckon it's like Ringo went, oh, George, why don't we pair up together and write a song together? Because nobody really likes my one about the octopus's garden.
I like octopus's garden.
No, I'm kidding.
That's a good one.
So I'm going to say, no, I'm going to, like, I don't think anyone was bold. I don't think those two were bold enough to think they'd give McCartney, Lennon a run for their money, though. I'm going to say that it was McCartney, like, helping out his, you know, lyrically and maybe compositionally a bit less advanced members. So I reckon it's the Beatles minus Lennon.
So you reckon John Lennon's come back and gone, oh my God, I was down the road 5 minutes and look what you come up with. It's terrible.
Exactly. That's my thought exactly.
Okay, well, so you got 2 out of 3 of them right. It was Lennon, McCartney and Ringo Starr.
Okay, so I had fun getting to my answers, so I'm not even upset.
In the US, the song was released as a B-side to the single Nowhere Man, and it's the first song in the Beatles' discography on which Ringo had a writing credit. It's also the only song on Rubber Soul that Ringo Starr sings. But I don't know, I was doing a bit of research, and it sounds like John Lennon kind of wrote the majority of it ages before, and then McCartney chipped in a bit, and Ringo Starr wrote like a few lyrics, and that was kind of it. I think it was a bit like, are you writing songs? Yes, we'll make sure you include your younger brother.
Yeah. No, fair, okay. I had fun concluding my answer. Again, I'm not upset at all.
It was good logic. It's good logic. Okay, I think the table's going to turn for you here when we talk about the American doctor Stubbins Firth. Have you heard of him?
Stubbins Firth? Yeah. No.
Okay, well, this is the first time you'll be hearing about it. Anyway, question 4. American doctor Stubbins Firth went to extreme lengths conducting his experiments. After a 1793 outbreak of a specific disease, the largest of its kind in American history, Firth set out to prove the ailment was not contagious by rubbing infected vomit into his cuts and eyeballs, later drinking the vomit, inhaling its fumes, and smearing his body with infected blood, saliva, and urine. Firth was researching which disease, which we now know is caused by mosquitoes, and can be prevented with a vaccination.
Okay. His name was Stubbins.
Stubbins Firth. And so Firth, no, just
Stubborn was literally his name.
Stubbins is his first name, and Firth with two Fs was his last name.
F F higher.
Yeah.
You would think a man like that would struggle so long to get credibility that you wouldn't dare bathe himself in the urine of infected patients. So 70s mosquito-borne vaccination.
Sorry, 1793.
1793.
Oh,
I was thinking it was the 1970s. Like, maybe.
Can you imagine? Like post, like, hippie era, dude. Like, man, we just gotta immerse ourselves in the vomit.
Okay. 1790s. Mosquito-borne.
Yep.
Infection. Like, vaccine. So it's a virus.
Mm.
Look, we all cop viruses for a lot of, like, typhoid fever if you go to a tropical area. Like malaria is the obvious one that's jumping at me. Mosquito borne, what else do they give? It's yeah, what tropical disease? It's not like, I mean, I'm always reminded of Ross River virus because...
What's Ross River virus?
Have you not heard this story?
No.
My girlfriend was diagnosed with the Ross River virus a few years ago, making her sick, which was really bizarre because it's only contracted from mosquitoes and you need to be in like a very specific area of far north Queensland to get it, which she'd never been to.
Huh.
Yeah, so, I mean, obviously American doctor researching, you know, cryptic Australian virus might not have, you
Did
know,
she have Ross River virus?
She had it, yeah, oh, wow. Yeah, but she no idea how she got it.
Was she okay?
I don't really know the details. I mean, she's still alive.
I just saw her before.
She doesn't, you know, I don't know of any long-term health complications, but yeah.
Hopefully not.
Yeah, just one of those medical mysteries that, you know, the doctors are working on, as I understand it. True. No, okay, that's an aside. Look, I was thinking rubella was going to be it because the word rub hadn't come up for a long time.
Yeah. And then he started...
Look, I'm gonna go typhoid fever. That's the only real one I can think of.
You're very close. It's yellow fever. So Firth did not become ill from his experiments, and he published his findings in an 1804 thesis called A Treatise on Malignant Fever with an Attempt to Prove Its Non-Contagious, Non-Malignant Nature. But the reason he didn't become ill was because the fluids had come from late-stage patients who were no longer contagious. So the whole thing was entirely pointless.
So he bathed in urine, vomit, sweat, rubbed all of it in his wounds in like a complete like dead stick of an experiment.
Yeah, and it was in the first place. Like, I hope he didn't find out before he died. He died quite young. And I don't know if this was related to this experiment. I don't think so, because it was a while after. But yeah, he died... hopefully he died like without ever finding that out. Because... God, like, I don't know how I could front up to work the next day. Like, oh, here he is. Like,
imagine being
Spewy Stubbins.
Imagine being called Stubbins Firth and that not being the most embarrassing part of your life.
Yeah, that's for sure. Okay.
So I'm on 0 from 4 here.
You're on 0, but I think this one's going to be more up your alley here. Question 5. So this is more about rubbing it in, like, something bad happens to someone, then something worse happens.
Okay, cool.
Question 5. In late 2023, Sydney police officer Dominic Gaynor was handed a 2-year good behaviour bond in order to undergo 100 hours of community service for pulling a gun on a colleague who was threatening to spoil which long-awaited
2022 movie sequel?
Long-awaited 2022?
2022 movie sequel, yeah.
Movie sequel. I was really tempted to say No Time to Die, but that came out in 2021. Long-awaited movie sequel. Oh, you know what would so be up a testosterone-filled gun-pulling cop's alley? And it's a long-awaited sequel. Surely Top Gun Maverick, right? But, like, what's to ruin? It's not like, you know, everyone's going to get bombed by the Russians because, like, they were too busy, like, playing beach volleyball. I mean, they were clearly... Everyone knew there was a mission. Everyone knew... I guess, like, who gets picked for it and everything. I'm going to say Top Gun Maverick and hope that I didn't go off on a tangent that was completely unrelated.
You're correct, and you're absolutely right. Like, wait, I wasn't sure if Tom Cruise was going to come and save the day. What do you mean? Don't spoil it. Okay, so this is what happened. According to court documents, when 26-year-old probationary constable Morgan Royston threatened to give the ending of the movie away, Gaynor said, "Don't spoil the movie, c***," and later, "I'll shoot you." He then pointed his firearm at the vicinity of the complainant and held it stationary for 5 seconds. What the hell? And the complainant since left the police force, which is very sad. Anyway, I'll just be careful how I edit all that because I don't want to make it like we're laughing at this guy, which we're not. I just think it was an incredulous turn of events for Dominic Gaynor acting like a complete clown. So at the end of round one, I'm on 2 points and Harley, you're just behind on one.
Wow, we've written some hard questions.
Some toughies, but some goodies.
Round two.
So round two, what have you got in store for me?
You've got walking the walk and talking the talk.
Excellent.
And you told me that you're expecting some questions about walking, some about talking.
Mm.
Frankly, walking and talking was the way that I wrote most of them. So until the last one that I wrote, or the second last, they've tried to encapsulate the sense of someone walking the walk, talking the talk, or, you know, both of those concepts on question.
Fantastic. All right, well, in round two, you're going to be hearing about DRs who are not doctors. But first, some walking and talking, and perhaps both at the same time.
Exactly. Yep. Okay. So, question one. The walkie-talkie is often credited as having been invented by engineers at what firm, which continues to make consumer electronics, including smartphones, which are mostly known by alphanumeric names?
Alphanumeric names?
Yeah,
so
I don't want...
A1, kind of.
Exactly. Yeah, okay. Yeah. So, I don't want you going like, Samsung, because I mean, they're like Galaxy and...
Right,
like,
yeah. Okay, let's have a little bit of think. I'm trying to think like what a Sony, that's like Sony Xperia, Google Pixel 6, it's not really alphanumeric, iPhone 7 or anything like that.
I'll give you a bit of a hint. Okay, when do you reckon the walkie-talkie came out?
For 40s, 50s probably?
Exactly.
Yeah.
World War II technology.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. This is a firm you've definitely heard of,
yeah.
But I don't think you'd go... this person, like, I know someone who has one of these phones, you know, might be the kind of thing you get as like a work phone that gets a call once a week,
kind of cheap,
and shitty, but like a long-standing firm for sure.
Right, right, okay, so a legacy technology. I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I'm gonna go through like some smartphone manufacturers, LG maybe, probably not. If I think like Huawei, possibly not either.
No, I don't think Huawei was doing much business at that point.
No, okay, yeah, true. I really don't know. Maybe, you know what? Maybe it's a Nokia. Something like a Nokia or something a bit like that that has been around for a while.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna say Nokia.
I like what you're thinking, and this is definitely like a pedigree of like early telephone technology kind of like fallen a bit behind at this point. Motorola.
You know what? When you just started talking just then, I was like, oh, I bet it's Motorola. Damn.
Yeah. So, do you know where Nokia's from, by the way?
I think it's Scandinavian.
It's Finland.
Yeah, okay.
Motorola's from Chicago, believe it or not.
Oh, wow.
I always thought of it as being maybe like Japanese or Korean, but they're a whole group of people that simultaneously came up with like... civil band portable radios around World War II, including two separate Canadian engineers. A lot of people credit it to a team of engineers headed up by a Polish guy at Motorola, though.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so...
Oh, did you say American technology in the question?
No.
Oh, okay, good.
No, I didn't.
So I just ignored that.
No. Moving on, okay. Cassius Clay was quoted as saying, if you want to lose your money, then bet on... which former heavyweight champion, before winning in a round one knockout as an 8-1 underdog in 1964.
Wow. So...
If you want to lose your money, then bet on which former heavyweight champion.
So I'm trying to think of the people that he beat famously. George Foreman was one.
Mm-hmm.
Sonny Liston was one.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like maybe someone like a Joe Frazier or someone maybe.
Mm-hmm.
Not boxing is definitely not my forte, though, I have to say. So, I do know that he famously beat Sonny Liston in, like, a really big sort of fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that may even be where that photo, the really iconic photo of him standing over the guy and, like, yelling at him is from, I think, maybe. So, I'm gonna go with Sonny Liston.
If you want to lose your money, then bet on Sonny.
Oh,
was exactly what was said.
Very good.
Yeah, so Sonny Liston. Sonny only lost 4 total fights in his career. 2 of them were consecutive fights against Muhammad Ali.
Wow.
First one billed as Cassius Clay. Second one billed as Muhammad Ali.
Yeah. Oh, I should have tweaked that Cassius Clay is really early in his career.
Yeah.
I guess he wouldn't have been an underdog later in his career, would he?
No. But yes, I'm glad that you know Sonny Liston and that you got it. And I think you might also I mean, just a bit of an aside that we won't discuss on a podcast like this, but Sonny Liston's mysterious death.
Oh, really?
Do you know about that?
I don't.
Yeah, I can't... He was in Vegas. He was about 40. He was still fighting, as I understand.
Wow.
And they reckon perhaps something to do with organized crime.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
Jeez, that's a topic for another day, I reckon, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, or maybe like a conspiracy theory podcast.
Yeah.
Should we ever make one?
Branch out, diversify a bit.
Yeah,
maybe.
Yeah. Now, well done. So you're on one from two so
one,
far
two,
this
okay.
round. Excellent. So, after losing the Republican nomination for the 1912 election, this question three, Theodore Roosevelt founded the Progressive Party, commenting, "He feels as strong as what animal?" The name of this North American male mammal ended up being the more common way of referring to this party, which ended up outpolling the Republican candidate, his former protege, William Taft.
Well, I know that the symbol for the Democrats is a donkey, but strong as a donkey, perhaps not the...
No. Well, I mean, in this era, the Republicans were more progressive than the Democrats.
Right, okay.
But yeah, I mean, we know... Like, he didn't found, like, it didn't... The Progressive Party kind of died off in 1920.
Mm.
It was only around, basically, for this election, pretty much.
Yeah, okay. Talking about, like a male... So, the male sort of clarify there is interesting.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
So, it makes me think that it's, like, something where... Like, an ox or something, for instance, that's, like... I think an ox has got to be a male, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like a bison or a buffalo, perhaps.
Mm-hmm.
So, strong as a moose, maybe? Or I think you can be a female moose, though. I'm going to say strong as an ox, because I know that's kind of a phrase, generally. So, I'm going to say strong as an ox.
You got to kick yourself. He said that he felt as strong as a bull moose.
Oh.
Which the
so bull moose is like a male moose.
Yeah.
Presumably. Okay.
Yeah, the
right.
bull female is a cow moose.
Okay.
So yeah, the bull moose party is what they were called.
Okay.
The runner up in the election in 1912.
Hmm.
And Theodore Roosevelt went on to rejoin the Democrat Party later on, and like I said, the Progressive Party, better known as the Bull Moose Party, kind of whimpered off and died, I think, in about 1920. So one more election where they didn't really do anything.
The Bull Moose Party is a great name for a party.
It is, yeah, yeah. Very old-timey name.
Do you have a Bull Moose-themed party where everyone's got to come dressed in antlers? You wouldn't really be able to say bye to it. Like, you wouldn't... Oh, it's like, oh, a bit of a corridor here. Oh, I can't really get through. My antlers
what,
are
what would getting you, away. What would your dad say to you if you left the Bull Moose Party?
What?
Bye, son.
Ah, that's good. Very good.
Mm.
That's what this podcast has become.
Yeah, yeah. Awesome. Okay. So... One from three so far.
Okay.
We've written some hard questions.
Yeah,
low
scoring.
Yeah, yeah. Who won the only Acting Academy Award presented for the 2005 film Walk the Line?
I actually think I know this. I think it's the person who plays June Carter Cash, Reese Witherspoon, I'm going to guess.
Ding, ding, ding. Absolutely correct.
Sweet.
Reese Witherspoon for her performance as June Carter Cash. The lead man playing Johnny Cash also was nominated, did not win.
Joaquin Phoenix.
Yeah, I didn't know how to pronounce Joaquin, so I just thought
Joaquin.
I'd say Joaquin.
Yeah.
Winding up, walking the walk and talking the talk.
Mm-hmm.
Talking Heads song Burning Down the House.
Yep.
Was covered by Swedish pop rock band The Cardigans.
Mm-hmm.
And what British singer in 1999?
Jeez, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know The Cardigans at all, I have to say.
The British singer has been scoring number one hit since 1965.
Oh, okay. Oh, no, I think I actually do know this. I think I've actually heard this version.
Mm.
I think it's perhaps Tom Jones.
Shouldn't have given you that.
Yeah,
clue,
sorry,
I?
Sorry. I feel like I actually can now picture his husky Welsh baritone belting this one out. So I'm going to say Thomas Tom Jones.
3 out of 5 for the round. Very well done, Jasper.
Come home strong. Okay, so, Holly, you'll be hearing questions now about DRs who are not doctors. And you've got a bit of ground to make up, but I reckon you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Excellent.
Okay. Question one. Officially launched in 2009, cricket's Decision Review System, or DRS, allows a fielding or batting team to appeal an umpire's decision of out or not out. The DRS is made up of four main components. Other than video replays, name two of the other three technological features that are used to determine whether a wicket should or should not be given.
Okay. So, video replay... Pretty obvious one.
Yep.
Okay.
I think one of them is Snicko, which I don't know if it's got a more technical name than Snicko, mm-hmm. but it's the microphone that picks up, the ball hitting the bat.
Yep.
And I know there's definitely the simulated leg before wicket kind of thing where it animates where the ball would have gone.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to think, the last kind of out, well, a run out and a catch would be from replay. I know, like, that's two of them, but
yeah.
I'm just trying to see if I can think of a third one and then lock in the ones I find most realistic. Replay would also be no balls. No, I'm just going to lock in Snicko and animated LBW.
You're correct. So there's Hawkeye, which is the name of the ball tracking that's primarily used for LBW. So that shows essentially where the ball would have gone had it not struck a player's pad before the wicket, mm-hmm. which constitutes out. So if it would have gone into the stumps, that means you're out. Real-time Snicko, which detects whether the ball has been nicked by the batter before it was caught behind by the wicketkeeper. If it has been, you're out.
Mm-hmm.
And Hotspot, which is infrared imaging that detects whether the ball made contact with the bat or the pad first. Pad first before wicket, then you're out. So well done. You've started strongly here.
Excellent. Thank you.
On the comeback trail. Question two. Starring singer Diana Ross in her film debut, the first biopic of an African-American figure to be nominated for an Oscar was a 1972 film centering on whom?
So Diana Ross is the DR.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Diana Ross, DR.
In the 70s?
Yeah.
Look, there's a whole bunch of people that won't, you know, that now come up as being super influential that would be too early for.
Mm. Casting a singer in the role as well.
A singer in the role. So I'm going to think it's someone who was old or dead at that point. Naturally a female. The kind of music like 30s, 40s of fame. Like, the only one that's coming to mind particularly is Billie Holiday. Mm-hmm. But then it's not really a strong point of mine, this kind of music. So I'm just going to put in Billie Holiday because I think she's probably deserving of a biopic from a long time ago.
Matt, that's correct. It was indeed Billie Holiday for the film Lady Sings the Blues. So Ross is best known as a member of the influential vocal group The Supremes and for such solo hits as Ain't No Mountain High Enough and Upside Down. Ross was actually nominated for Best Actress at the Oscars for that role, but she lost out to Liza Minnelli, who won for the musical film Cabaret. Lady Sings the Blues was nominated for 4 other Oscars, but didn't win any. And it's named after one of Holiday's albums, Lady mm-hmm. Sings the Blues.
Excellent. Cool.
So well done, Matt. You're off to a flying start here. Question 3. The Dominican Republic and Haiti share the island of Hispaniola, the mm-hmm. second largest island in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
What is the largest island in the Caribbean?
I'm going to get to the point because we beat around the bush on a few questions. Yep. The largest island in the Caribbean is Cuba.
He's on fire. 3 out of 3 so far. Excellent. In the DRs. Question 4. Incorrectly assumed to derive from people tolling bells after their premature burials, what two-word expression actually traces its origin to the practice of replacing a racehorse with a very similar-looking horse in order to defraud bookmakers?
Okay, so I haven't heard the DR at this point. My guess is the R is, like, ringing. Don't ring...
I reckon clue into the people tolling bells after their premature burials. Because that's what this sounds like it should be.
It's like, it's like a... Nah, nothing's coming to me particularly, to be honest.
What did you say before? Ring in?
Yeah, don't ring something, but then beyond that...
Okay.
Absolutely nothing's coming to me at all. Oh! Is it the phrase a dead ringer?
You're absolutely right. It is a dead ringer. So if someone says that they're a dead ringer for something, it means that they look exactly alike. So the word ringer has been used to describe horses substituted in for other horses since the 19th century. And it's also now we think of words like ring-in. I'm just the ring-in today.
Yeah, yeah.
With the word dead here actually being used to add emphasis. So not actually dead as in like deceased. Dead in the same way it's used in like dead heat or dead center, like right now.
Yeah.
So dead, that's where dead ringer comes from. So there you go.
There you go. Interesting.
Mate, you're betting perfect in round 2 here. I know. 4 out of 4. Question 5. I'll back you in for this as well, to be honest. Question 5. Eccentric NBA legend Dennis Rodman has raised eyebrows in recent years for his friendship with which political leader whom he first met on an overseas trip in 2013?
Yeah.
This one I know as well. I'm fairly confident that he's Dennis Rodman's good mates with Kim Jong-un.
Well, he absolutely is. Rodman told Mike Tyson's Hot Boxing podcast that he met Kim Jong-un after a Harlem Globetrotters game in Pyongyang, with the dictator then inviting him to his house for a party. This is a quote. "Let's have dinner tonight. A little karaoke and have some vodka. Some hotties and stuff like that," Rodman said the leader told him. "Next thing I know, we are having dinner and we are drunk as shit." He starts singing karaoke and I have no clue what the fuck he's talking about. According to Rodman, an 18-piece band of, quote, hot, end quote, women came out and only played the theme song from the TV show Dallas. Rodman then suggested that they learn other songs, including by Van Halen, The Rolling Stones, and Pearl Jam. And to his surprise and glee, when he returned to North Korea, the band had done just that.
you read it like you were sermonizing from like the New Testament there.
The Prophet Dennis.
Yeah. When I was in the Dominican Republic, actually...
Mm.
I was with a guy called Ken who was, had done a master's degree in LA and had worked at quite a fancy hotel.
Yeah.
And, it was a flight crew hotel that hosted, some international airline crews. And Dennis Rodman apparently used to come and visit specifically a flight attendant from an airline that I won't name. And apparently he would drink a crazy amount in the bar with everyone and was quite a nice guy.
Wow.
Yeah.
He'd be a fun person to have a night with. I don't know if I'd want to be long-term mates with him necessarily, but he does seem like a fun character.
Yeah, look, I mean, I reckon Kim Jong-un, myself, and Dennis Rodman hitting the bars in Pyongyang would be a night to remember for sure. Geez.
Or a night to forget, depending if Kim Jong-un wanted to wipe your memory, perhaps.
Yeah, I don't trust myself not to say something a bit dodgy to Kim Jong-un after a few vodkas and watching some hotties play Van Halen on the trumpet.
Or the theme from Dallas.
Yes.
Round three.
Okay, so we're back from cutting out a few comments about the North Korean
Supreme Leader.
Supreme Leader at his own request. He's just gotten in touch. We've just deleted it, so it's all good. Hopefully there won't be any issues going forward. So, Harley, you've made an incredible comeback here to actually lead 6-5 heading into round three.
Mm-hmm.
What will I be hearing questions about again?
You'll be hearing questions on Super.
Super, and you're going to be hearing about not to get political. So take it away when you're ready.
Okay. So Super. The Super key on early computer keyboards was commonly replaced by what now known key?
The Super key?
Yeah, it's called the Super key. And it said Super on it.
Well, I do have a little bit of an unfair advantage because I've got my laptop in front of me right now as we record them. Well, so do you, actually. So I'm trying to think of like... not superfluous, but like strange keys. The first one that comes to mind is shift, because maybe it puts things into like capital letters and makes them sort of more super. So the other things I'm thinking maybe like tab, like alt, those sort of ones. But
What I will tell you is that these come from early X window operating systems computers.
Okay.
And there was also a hyper and a meta key.
Wow.
So the hyper, meta, and super keys all existed.
Wow.
I want to know what super key is now known as. So I don't want you thinking like, you know, in 40 years we've changed one key and super became this.
Yeah,
like there's a few going around.
So. Okay, well, with that in mind then, I'm still going to stick with shift. That feels the most right. So I'm gonna lock in shift, please.
Okay. So there were two correct answers for this one.
Okay.
On a Windows computer, it's the Windows key.
Right.
It's the little Windows. On an Apple, like in front of you, it's the Command.
Oh, sure, okay.
Yeah, so very close.
Damn.
Yeah, Command Shift starts off everything in a Mac.
Yeah. Close.
Yeah.
Hate to say it.
Yeah. So, superannuation funds are what we know in Australia. We're familiar with the term.
Yeah, I am.
You've considered moving to New Zealand before?
Yeah, potentially.
Yeah? Have you looked into, like, salary packaging and stuff?
Not at all.
No? Okay. Well, what I'll do is, to make it fair, name me either the name of the equivalent program in New Zealand or the United States.
Okay. Is superannuation called superinuation over there?
No, it's absolutely not. It's got kind of a nationalistic name across
the country. Oh, right. Okay. I feel like I have actually heard the American name for it, and it's, like, not as big a thing, I don't think, over there, maybe. I'm going to say the New Zealand one is called, it's called your Kiwi Fund.
Oh, that is brutally close. It's really? Called the Kiwi Saver.
No.
So,
okay.
I hope no one's going to be trying to like write a university essay on these schemes based on what I know. But kind of interestingly, like in Australia, it's just part of your salary. Like you're on like whatever plus super, which is like 9% or like whatever. It's completely opt-in in New Zealand.
Really?
It gets deducted from your salary at the percentage that you set up.
Okay.
Wow. In the US, it's generally company matched. So if you go, I want to do like 6% 401k, it's called 401k contribution.
Yeah, I've heard of that, yeah.
Your business will also, in addition to your salary, put in 6% or whatever.
Yep.
Kind of stingy from the New Zealand, though. It's just like full.
What do you even know about it?
Oh, I think everyone knows about KiwiSaver. Yeah, yeah. It's, oh,
everyone knows about that.
Oh, KiwiSaver. Oh, that bit was brought in 2006, Brew. No, I think it was 2009, but I just wanted to say
you wanted to say that's fair. I mean,
yeah. That's a rough start to the round, Jasper.
0-2. Jeez, I'm worried about this.
Okay, question 3. Along with Pikachu, what pink Pokemon character features as one of the 12 original characters in the Nintendo 64 game Super Smash Bros?
Okay, I actually think I know this. I think my luck's starting to turn around. I think this is Jigglypuff.
Ding, ding, ding. Okay, absolutely sweet. Correct. So Jigglypuff. Other characters from the original Super Smash Bros. Include Link from The Legend of Zelda, Donkey Kong from Donkey Kong, and I was hoping you weren't going to say this, Kirby.
Yeah.
Kirby's from Kirby.
You know, do you know where Kirby got his name from? I heard this the other day on a podcast. That, not this podcast, another one.
I wasn't listening at this point. Yeah, go on.
No, are you seeing other podcasts? No, it was about like the lawyer who represented Nintendo in like a legal battle. His last name was Kirby, and they won the legal battle, and they named the character Kirby after him.
That is cool.
Yeah.
That is
cool. I think it was a legal battle where they got sued over the name Donkey Kong, because it was too similar to King Kong, but they ended up winning, and he was... Yeah, they were like, we want to honor you, Kirby, with this fat pink character. He'll forever bear your name.
Awesome. Okay, so comeback in progress. 1 out of 3 from Jasper.
Yep. Score's level now.
Score's level. The character Superman first appeared in the first issue of the original run of what DC magazine?
I think I possibly know this. Because I reckon it's referenced on The Simpsons. I think there's like a bit where like Krusty lights his cigar like with like this original copy of this magazine.
Mm-hmm. And there's also another thing where Homer throws it out when he's at the Homer's Barbershop Quartet going through the box.
Yeah.
He throws out junk, and it's all like priceless.
I think it's Action Comics, I think it's called.
Absolutely correct.
Sweet.
If you happen to have a copy of Action Comics #1 lying around from the 30s, it's worth in the vicinity of about $3 million.
Now, I've got to check my other jeans.
Yeah, exactly. Yep. Now, well done. Well done. 2 from 4 so far.
Okay.
Final question for Super. Who performed the 1980s new wave funk single, Super Freak, which was subsequently sampled by various artists, including MC Hammer, Black Eyed Peas, Nicki Minaj, and Big Sean.
This is... Nice.
Yeah, that one.
That wasn't even rehearsed. How good was that?
That was good. I know, yeah.
I actually think I know this as well. I think this is Rick James, bitch. Because I think he says, like, it's Rick James, bitch.
Oh, does he?
Yeah, I'm sorry to use such
I thought
bawdy
you
just, language
I thought
on the podcast.
Flexing on me right there.
No, I think it's Rick James. Rick James, perhaps, I'm not sure. I think that's his name.
Absolutely correct. It is fantastic. Rick James, bitch, apparently. And did you know MC Hammer actually initially refused to credit him as a songwriter on that song?
Really?
On the song You Can't Touch This? And then went to court with MC, like went to court with Rick James. Rick James clearly winning and getting a heap of back royalties from like one of the most popular hip hop songs of the
day. Yeah.
Just wild that you would think you could get away with using his entire musical track like putting different lyrics.
The crux of the song is that. It's like, I am this song. My ability to tell people whether or not they can touch it is what makes this song.
Exactly. Maybe that was the whole like ethos, was that like he didn't think they could touch him in a court of law.
Yeah, they could touch him. And they touched him up.
I decided to listen to Super Freak in the gym.
Yeah.
And, like, I'd never really listened to it in full.
Yeah. Is it good?
oh, it's all right. But like the amount of times I would hear like a line, oh, that's what that's from. That's what, wow.
Yeah,
there
okay. you go. Seminal.
Exactly. Cornerstone. Okay, clawed back, 3 out of 5.
Sweet, so I'm on 8 points. So that leaves you requiring 3 points for the win out of your final round and 2 to draw.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
So are you ready for not to get political?
Not to get political.
Question one. Mm-hmm. Australian rugby league identity Mal Meninga had what is often referred to as the shortest political career in history,
mm-hmm.
bowing out of his campaign to run for the ACT Legislative Assembly when he was unable to answer what question during his first radio interview.
It was something very basic. It was something not only that he should have been aware would be asked,
mm.
but like he should have just had an answer.
Yeah, yeah.
I think it was something like, I want to say it was something like, what has compelled you to go into politics, or what could you do that other politicians, like what differentiates you from other politicians?
Yeah, I'll be loose on the wording for this one. If you don't get the wording 100%, yeah. you just kind of get the vibe.
I think it was in essence like what is your motivation for going into politics? And like he trails off for 30 seconds and I think he goes, I'm buggered, and takes off the headset and just walks out of the studio.
That's exactly right. So he was asked, why are you standing? So essentially, yeah, like, yeah. why are you going to politics? Meninga had been running as an independent candidate for the now defunct electorate of Molonglo in 2001. Some estimates have Meninga's political career lasting only 28 seconds, because like you said, he goes in, he gets asked that, and he kind of goes, yeah, I've been in the spotlight, and I'm just a person. And then he goes, oh, sorry, I'm buggered, and leaves. But it actually didn't last for 28 seconds. In 2017, the former Canberra Raiders centre said he actually spent 6 weeks preparing to sidestep into politics and sort of going through everything, all the questions he could be asked by the media and sort of what his politics would be. He said that his abrupt withdrawal came because he'd never in that time been asked to consider why people should vote for him. And that was yeah. kind of his, like, wait, like his reckoning, I guess.
Yeah, well, there you go. Like, I don't know, as far as former NRL players to go into politics, Mal Meninga, you know, having captained a lot of winning teams, having coached, he might not have coached by that point, like anything.
Oh, no, he had. I think he coached the Raiders in the late 90s, from memory. Well, not from...
Like, basically yeah. straight out of playing, he coached.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I mean, Glenn Lazarus.
Glenn Lazarus gone in. Matt Adamson, who's another ex-NRL player, he was Palm United as well.
Yeah, like... I don't know. I think Mal should have backed himself a bit harder.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he's a beloved rugby league figure for sure. So even if politics didn't quite work for him, he's done pretty well as a coach.
Yeah, absolutely. So.
Well done. So question two. To avoid association with far-right political party, the National Front, Jerry Halliwell, a.k.a. Ginger Spice, stitched what symbol onto the back of her iconic Union Jack dress, which she first wore at the 1997 Brit Awards? This symbol has been popular since at least the 1950s, perhaps more so now than ever with the advent of smartphones.
Okay, so it's something that's decidedly progressive. It's been around since the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's with the advent of smartphones, it's become more... Wow, okay. I'm going to think it's an emoji that people use, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I think it could be? I think it could be the peace symbol.
Like what symbol?
As in like two fingers up. Okay. Yeah, you know what? I reckon like the weird like Volkswagen peace symbol I don't think has become more popular.
Mm-hmm.
You know the one I'm talking about, yeah, right? Yeah. Like, I reckon it's the two fingers peace symbol.
It's actually the smiley face. Ah. So can you picture this dress? It's got like a Union Jack. And on the back there's a smiley face because... The Union Jack was used by the National Front, and she didn't want to be confused as being like a far right
sympathiser.
Yeah, sympathiser. So there you go. So it's got a smiley face, a yellow smiley face.
There you go.
Hmm.
I was reading about the smiley face actually the other day.
Well,
yeah.
Hmm.
Believe it or not,
I do believe it.
Like it, because like the walking the walk, talking the talk category, sort of stuffed up the algorithm for recommended things because I spent so many times googling like. People who showed the haters wrong, and now like Google's gonna think that I'm wildly insecure. And one of the ones that came up was the dude that designed the smiley face. Or no, he bought the smiley face from the original designer for like $45 and then sold it for however much. But yeah, thanks for giving me that category. Google now thinks I'm a loser.
You know that piece, just backtracking a bit, the Volkswagen, like that peace symbol you're talking about,
yeah.
That's called the nuclear disarmament symbol.
Ah.
And it was created because it's a combination of N and D sort of together, like nuclear disarmament.
I did not. That's good trivia.
Good fact.
Yeah.
Okay, so you're 1 point behind at this stage. So ideally, you can get two here to win the game, or one to draw a level and force a tiebreaker. Question three. Despite being born in a neighbouring country, which historical figure famously worked for the Swiss government's patent office between 1902 and 1909 before leaving to take up a position at the University of Zurich? This person later stated that he, quote, hatched his most beautiful ideas while working this government job.
The person that's immediately coming to mind is maybe Einstein.
Okay.
I don't actually know where Einstein was born, though. Like, he could be German. Like, it's a Germanic kind of name, but I've always associated him with Israel and the USA.
Who's offered the presidency of Israel.
And he's also one of those characters... Not characters. He's also one of those people that's kind of hard to place in history. Definitely was around post-World War II because he was off the presidency of Israel. 1902, let's say he was, like, 70 in the 50s.
Okay.
That would mean in 1902 he'd be about 20. I reckon that's like a clerical entry level job for someone that's like graduated from something. I'm just gonna go Einstein.
It is Einstein. He was born in what is modern day Germany. So it was Einstein. Well done. He left to like I said, take up a sort of professor academic sort of position at the University of Zurich, and we know he went on to do some pretty good things. So before that, worked at the patent office in Switzerland.
There you go.
So you've drawn level. You need to get one of the next two questions correct to take out the win. Okay. In 2021, Australian businessman turned politician Clive Palmer was forced to pay $1.5 million to Universal Music for the unauthorized use of which song in his television advertisements ahead of the 2019 federal election? Dee Snider, the frontman for the band that recorded the original song, gave evidence during the week-long trial and said that Palmer's use of the song was, quote, not good for my heavy metal image.
I remember this. I remember the ads. I couldn't escape the ads.
They were everywhere.
I might even do my own rendition of the ad.
Feel free to. Step away from the mic a bit, though, if you're going to, because it's quite loud.
The thing that's kind of annoying is, for you, is I can remember the song, but, like, it's escaped me who actually sung it. It was, and the question is, what's the song, right?
Yeah.
It's,
What's the Clive Palmer version?
Australia's not gonna cop it anymore.
Yeah, that's correct.
We're not gonna take it. And I think it might be by a band called, like, it's not Whitesnake. It's, like, someone like that, but it's We're Not Gonna Take It.
It is. It's We're Not Going to Take It by Twisted Sister.
Twisted Sister,
Whitesnake adjacent. But Palmer's lawyers unsuccessfully argued that We're Not Going to Take It was itself a, quote, rip-off of popular Christmas tune O Come All Ye Faithful. To be honest, kind of see it. I do kind of hear that. Like, da-na-na-na-na-na, and da-na-na-na-na. It's kind of similar.
Yeah.
But Palmer claimed the inspiration for his jingle, Aussie's Not Going to Cop It, had struck at 3 a.m. when he was in bed, and that he had written the lyrics on a notepad he kept on his bedside table. Something he said, quote, creative people do, end quote. Federal Court Justice Anna Katzmann rejected Palmer's evidence as ludicrous and called him a most unimpressive witness.
You would think Clive Palmer, the amount of time that man would spend in the courtroom, would have like a slightly better, defense. But to be fair, he's the kind of dude that would have lawyers on the bank on the payroll.
Yeah.
It would just be like a good, like, I guess he'd have to pay Twisted Sister's court costs, but like he was only gonna have to pay the royalties he would have paid if he had asked for permission.
Yeah, I just like the idea of Clive Palmer rolling over in bed like, wait a minute,
Anna,
Aussie's not gonna cop it. And then, yeah, he doesn't really sound like that. But yeah, I just like the idea of it coming to him in a dream about whether or not Aussies should cop it.
Clive Palmer...
Aussie's not going to cop it!
Clive Palmer strikes me as the kind of man that would struggle to sleep a whole night, I reckon.
Yeah,
I reckon
possibly.
He'd wake up from time to time every night.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, okay, final question in Not to Get Political. An adaptation of which politician's name has become a somewhat popular given name among ethnically Albanian men in Kosovo after the politician helped organize NATO retaliation against besieging Yugoslav forces in 1999. This politician, no longer in power, has since visited Kosovo to meet with his namesake children.
I think I know this because in Kosovo, there's a... is it in Kosovo or Bosnia, maybe? There's a statue of the US president that was oversaw campaigns then. So, and what was the term you said for the name? Like a...
What do you mean? It was like an adaptation.
An adaptation.
Like, it's not like... completely verbatim.
Yeah, it's not like, his name. Yeah, yeah. I think like Bill Clinton was the president in power at that time, and there's definitely statues of Bill Clinton in that part of the world. I don't know how you would adapt the name Bill to make it more like ethnically Kosovan or Bosnian.
Yeah, yeah.
Maybe they just put like Clinton or something. Unless it's like Ron Brown, who I think was Secretary of Defense at that point, who actually died in a plane crash in that part of the world. I'm just gonna say Bill Clinton.
It's actually Tony Blair.
Really?
So the name, which is spelled T-O-N-I-B-L-E-R, Tony Blair, is often shortened to Tony or Blair. And one of the Tony Blairs, Blair Thassi, has gone on to become a professional soccer player and at one stage represented Albanian First Division club Besa Cavalier.
There you go.
So there you go. Tony Blair. They love him.
Tony, yeah, wow. The other one that's kind of... like, that's interesting. The other one that kind of is the amount of Venezuelans with, like, ethnically Arab names because for political reasons.
Really?
Yeah, because Venezuela's a bit of a pariah state at the moment. Like, the amount... like, when I was in Miami recently, like, you'd get in an Uber and it would be like, Omar is picking you up, and it would be like a Venezuelan dude.
Oh, interesting.
And I know there's actually a professional football player who I think is from Venezuela, whose name is... Osama bin Laden.
Really?
His given name. I think it's Osama bin Laden with a V.
Jeez, can you imagine like, oh, bin Laden down the left wing? Probably not the left wing.
I think you might have had a sibling called Saddam Hussein as well.
Really? Like, no, surely not.
There's definitely a football player. And like his siblings have definitely got like similar political names, but there you go,
yeah.
Tony like,
Blair.
If I have a son, Tony Blair's not making the list, unfortunately.
Tony Blair Blue, Bruce. I just like the idea that it's all one. It's not Tony Blair. It's Tony Blair.
Yeah,
I don't know if that's how it's pronounced. Like, I don't know if there is a gap
to
when
fair,
you say it.
But... having like a short two syllable name when you're from a country like with the kind of last names that they've got there would probably be a bit anticlimactic. That's why
right.
I thought maybe like. Clinton something.
Yeah, yeah.
yeah. There you go. No,
that's fair.
Tony Blair.
Yeah, I think Venezuela, just on Venezuela, is on like DFAT's list of places not to go to.
Yeah, well, Caracas is the most dangerous city in the world.
Is that true?
Mm. Lots of, yeah, like in my travels, like not that I went extensively through the area, but lots of Venezuelan immigrants in quite poor countries. Like
yeah, okay.
Venezuelans that were living in the Dominican Republic.
Yeah, wow.
And in, I mean, in Miami for sure, but yeah, it's like considered the most dangerous city in the world.
Wow.
Mm.
Damn. At the end of three rounds today, Harley, you've ended up on 9 points and I'm slightly behind on 8 points. So that makes you the trivia champ for a second week running.
Harley, you are the champ. Jasper, you are the chump.
Yep. Yeah, back to back. Let's see if we can make it a three-peat with the next one.
Fantastic. So just before we sign off, Harley, do you have any final words for the listeners?
I thought maybe an app sign-off. After reminding you about everyone's favourite brick phone manufacturer of the mid-2000s, might say goodbye, Moto.
Goodbye, Moto, from me as well. Thanks, guys. See you next week.
Trivia is the real winner here. I think we can all agree.